The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This corner, weighing in with his take on current events, the smarty of the party, the mighty mite from the right, the heavyweight of debate, the man who's in cahoots with the grassroots, the broadcaster master, Jimmy Sangenberger.
Saturday night is always all right for the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And indeed, it is once again a pleasure and a privilege to be with you as always here on good old 710 KNUS. If you want to get connected up with me 24/7, 365, you can do so via Twitter. Follow me there. Tweet at me at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, center on Twitter. You can also email me via the 710KNUS website on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show page. And also on my personal website, jimmysangenberger.com. Remember, there's no A, there's no I, there's no U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy. You just go to the contact page at jimmysangenberger.com, can shoot me a message. In addition, follow me on Facebook. Like the page, Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality, facebook.com/JimmySangenbergerPro. Got some interesting stuff for you tonight here on the program. We will talk with candidates for the State House of Representatives running for re-election, Colin Larson of Jefferson County, Mark Baisley of Douglas County, and Kim Ransom of Douglas County. They need your support to stay in office, and we need to expand the number of Republicans in the State House and retake the State Senate. We'll talk with them in the third hour of the program this evening. I'll also be joined at the bottom of this hour by Max McGuire of conservative-daily.com, advocacy director there, and also the host of the Conservative Daily podcast. And we will dive into the latest on the Mueller stuff. 27 phones apparently wiped clean or something. It's too mind-boggling, too crazy to believe and to really wrap my head around. So Max is going to help me make a little bit of sense, I guess, out of this nonsensical story uncovered by the Inspector General Horowitz looking into the Mueller investigation. We'll talk about what's happening with regards to Durham and this resignation by one of his legal team members because she says that the Department of Justice under President Trump is trying to play politics on the Russia investigation. That is the investigation into the Russia investigation that Durham is undergoing here. And we'll also touch on Bob Woodward's book. Got some thoughts on that tonight. Plus, I'm going to share a lot of different commentaries. I've got some stuff we need to break down with regards to the Middle East and the fact that, look, President Trump deserves, because he's earned it, the Nobel Peace Prize. I really believe that. I mean, it's pretty clear. We talked about United Arab Emirates last month and that big deal that the Trump administration helped Israel and the United Arab Emirates reach. Groundbreaking, truly historic. And then just yesterday, Bahrain and Israel reached an agreement brokered by President Trump and his Middle Eastern team. Plus, you add on to that the fact that other countries in the Middle East are gearing up to have these kinds of relations open up. We're thinking like Oman, for example. This is unprecedented. Genuinely unprecedented and historic. Also, Serbia and Kosovo In the last couple of weeks, they reached an agreement brokered by the Trump administration. And it's remarkable. I got a lot of thoughts to share on that. I'm going to share an interview, some excerpts from an interview that we did on this very program with former ambassador to Bahrain, Sam Zakim, and Centennial Institute fellow Samuel Lurie. Just last month, after the UAE deal was reached with Israel, where we dove in a little bit to how that came about and the significance, even more now, within a month, we got Bahrain added on. A policy, by the way, in the Middle East that Joe Biden would completely reverse. He'd go back to hugging Iran, embracing Iran, trying to get the Iranians back to the table in a way that is weak, that is feckless. Whereas President Trump said, nope, we're going to be tough on Iran, and we're going to rebuild relations with the Middle East, with the Arab world, and with Israel, and do some remarkable things. That's what we're seeing. I've got thoughts on that coming up. Plus, the economy. As you know, I am very in tune with the economy. It's my passion. It's something that I think is so critical. I think we need limited government. We need to unleash businesses. We need to unleash the unlimited potential of each and every individual in the private sector, not government micromanagement. I'm sick of government. Sick and tired of these big government programs. Massive spending from an all-knowing, all-powerful federal government that thinks it knows what's best for our lives. That thinks it can micromanage the economy. Nonsense. Nonsense. So the economy is undergoing some really tremendous improvements. We got some remarkable data that's been coming in on the jobs market, on economic growth. The list goes on. Just from reopening and starting to get government off the backs of businesses, it's working. We'll talk about that later on, and I'm going to share just exactly how I've been proven right from my debate months ago with Mark Cuban. Remember, I debated him where Cuban argued that we needed a massive government program to hire 3 to 6 million workers by the federal government. Otherwise, nobody was going to do it. Well, we've increased jobs by more than 10 million. We didn't need some massive government program to accomplish that sort of objective of the scale like Cuban was saying. I'm going to talk about that later on in the show and break down some of the economic data. So I got a lot of moving parts coming up later in the show. I want to begin with a couple of things. First of all, yesterday, of course, was the 19th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. And I remember that day vividly. I was barely 11 years old on September 11th, 2001. Barely 11 years old, but I remember first in the morning, I was in sixth grade language arts class, English class, and an announcement came over the loudspeaker. I don't remember exactly what was said, but I know it was about the terrorist attacks, and I hadn't heard anything about it yet. And I was confused. I was shocked and I was confused. I didn't understand. And then later on, we got home. I got home from school, from middle school, and my uncle was still there. Now, he wasn't there when I arrived home. He'd been went golfing because what happened was my uncle came for the inaugural game at Sports Authority Field or whatever it's called now. But it was then the new stadium, and my uncle had come in to see the Giants play the Broncos because we're Giants fans. He came in from upstate New York, and he got stranded here in Colorado. What else was he going to be able to do but go golfing to get out there, and especially because his home state was attacked. New York State was attacked. So I came home from school. The news was on, and it was vivid. It was striking. It was stunning. It was horrific. And then I remember my uncle getting back from golfing. And that's when I was like, hey, Uncle Walt, what are you doing here? He couldn't leave because all airplanes had been stopped. I will never forget that fateful day on September 11, 2001, when terror hit home. And the world changed. America changed. The world changed. immediately. And for a brief time as well, we were together, united as one people, one nation, not divided along political lines, but united along the fact that we are all Americans. We were proud to stand together. You got to remember the members of Congress all standing together on the steps of the United States Capitol, singing our nation's patriotic songs, showing that we were all in this together. Now, it didn't last long, but it was quite a moment at the time. And the loss of 3,000 American lives to radical Islamic terror was horrific and truly heartbreaking. And we must never forget, never, ever forget those who made the ultimate sacrifice, saving their fellow citizens in New York City, whether they were policemen or firefighters. We cannot forget those who were the medical personnel that day, or those who lost their lives, of course, and their families. We cannot forget the, as George W. Bush put it at the time, the faceless cowards that slaughtered 3,000 innocent Americans just going about their day. We must never forget that fateful day on September 11th, 2001. All those who made sacrifices, all those who did so much, gave so much for our country, the innocent lives that were lost, and of course, the extreme enemy that we were introduced to in the most shocking and horrifying of ways. We will never forget. We must never forget. But we must also not use September 11th in a way that is horribly political either. And there was something that was said on CNN. Take a listen to John Harwood from CNN.
One final thing to point out on the 19th anniversary of 9/11, we are right now in this pandemic losing twice as many people every week as were lost on 9/11. We can't forget that toll.
Making a comparison between a deadly pandemic to September 11th, a terrorist attack, an intentional terrorist attack on our country, making a comparison as though President Trump is allowing multitudes of 9/11s to happen each week. That's how low the media has gotten, and it is disgusting. And yet, they're unabashed. They're unashamed in what they say and how they act. And it's sad that on this weekend where we memorialize September 11, 2001, the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that this type of politics would be what the media plays. But while it's sad, it's not surprising. It's not at all surprising. And we will see what happens in terms of the media's conduct moving forward. But for now, let's recognize what they're really about and set it aside and say, we're not going to make such ridiculous notions get any credence, because they should have no credence. They're absurd. They are ridiculous. We need to focus on what matters and remember that day, remember the lessons learned, remember those lessons that we learned from 9/11/2001 and put them to practice. And let us never forget those who lost their lives. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. This is News Talk 710 at KNUS and the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. So glad to be with you on this evening's edition of the program. I want to take a little music bonus bumper break. This is a tune by the late, great Dwayne Allman doing a cover of the Chuck Berry song, No Money Down. It's a fun one. Take a little listen and we will keep rocking on with the best bumper music known to man, 7 years running, a News Talk 710 KNUS. Here's the bonus bumper, Dwayne Allman with No Money Down.
Mm-hmm. As I was motivating back towards town, I seen a Cadillac sign. It said, no money down. So I eased on my brake, and I pulled up there in the drive. I gunned up my motor, and then I walked on inside. The dealer came down. He said, man, trade that Ford. I can put you in a car that will eat up the road. Now, you just tell me what you want, and then sign this line. I have it brought right to your house in about an hour's time. I'm gonna get me a car, and I'm gonna head on down the road. Ain't gonna have to worry no more about that broke down raggedy fool. Well, miss, I want a yellow convertible, a four-door DeVille. Man, I want a Continental spare and some Y chrome wheel and power steering and a power brakes and a powerful motor with a jet off take. Some nice cool air conditioning and some nice warm heat and a big old feather bed and a pillow in the back seat. I want a ship to shore radio, a color TV and a phone, so I can talk to my honey while I'm riding alone. I'm gonna get me a car, yeah, and head on down the road.
Gotta love the great late Duane Allman, one of the absolute best guitarists ever to live, bar none, here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Once again, best bumper music known to man. 7 years running as of next weekend, technically the 21st of September, but my goodness, time has flown right on by. So real quick, I want to make a couple observations relative to coronavirus pandemic, because look, I want to throw this out to you for a moment, something that I've been pondering that I heard someone talk about, and I thought, yeah, you know, that makes sense. It's a great point. There are a lot of people who are saying the United States per capita is performing worse than a slew of other countries, including Western Europe, Canada, so on and so forth. But what they're trying to do is make an apples-to-apples comparison between the United States and these other countries. Now, there are several reasons why that type of comparison is flawed, but one big one. And yes, this shows that we have a problem in the United States, but not one that we're unfamiliar with. The COVID-19 data is showing that with certain pre-existing health conditions, you are more likely to suffer serious effects from COVID-19 and death. And one of those big ones, big factors, is obesity. Obesity is one of the driving comorbidities, as it's called, that gets exacerbated by COVID-19 and can lead to death. The United States has a problem with obesity that most other countries in the globe don't have. So you cannot simply say, oh, well, the United States per capita is doing worse than this country or that country, without acknowledging some of the key differences in the basics of that country's population, the pre-existing health issues and so forth that may be more prevalent. That's setting aside those deaths that were totally different, had nothing to do with pre-existing conditions that were exacerbated by COVID-19, but were like somebody dying of alcohol poisoning from getting too drunk, as happened in one part of Colorado, and had COVID-19 in the system, or a car accident, or getting struck by lightning, and they had COVID-19 in their systems, and they were counted towards the totals. That needs to be factored in as well. So then we go to Sturgis, South Dakota, where the media has said 250,000 new coronavirus cases, may have been caused by the Sturgis motorcycle rally. A new paper that came out says, quote, "The Sturgis motorcycle rally represents a situation where many of the worst case scenarios for super spreading occurred simultaneously." They called this paper "The Contagion Externality of a Super Spreading Event, the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally and COVID-19. The media made a big to-do out of this thing, which was, by the way, a paper from the IZEA Institute of Labor Economics. Economists coming up with this paper and saying more than a quarter million of Americans may have gotten COVID-19 from Sturgis. The Hill, for example, tweeting out, "Sturgis motorcycle rally was a super spreading event that cost public health $12.2 billion. The Sturgis motorcycle rally held in South Dakota last month may have caused 250,000 new coronavirus cases." That was NBC News. Okay, first of all, may have, could have. That's the operative phrase there, by the way. Anything could happen doesn't mean that it did. As Reason points out, according to South Dakota health officials, 124 new cases in the state, including one fatal case, were directly linked to the rally. Overall, COVID-19 cases linked to the Sturgis rally were reported in 11 states as of September 2nd, to a tune of at least 260 new cases, according to the Washington Post. There may very well be more cases that have been linked to the early August event, but so far that's only 260 confirmed cases, about 0.1% of the number the IZEA paper offers. To get to that astronomical number of cases allegedly spread because of the Sturgis motorcycle rally, the researchers analyzed, quote, anonymized cell phone data to track the smartphone pings from non-residents and movement of those before and after the event, according to Newsweek. The study then linked those who attended and traveled back to their homes and compared changes in coronavirus trends after the rally's conclusion. As Reason goes on, they say, quote, essentially, the researchers assumed that new spikes in cases in areas where people went post-rally must have been caused by those rally attendees, despite there being no particular evidence that this was the case. The paper, which has not been peer-reviewed, failed to account for simultaneous happenings like schools in South Dakota reopening, among other things, that could have contributed to coronavirus spread in some of the studied areas. So they weren't looking at actual case data. They weren't actually sourcing with medical information, with data provided by governments specifically saying this was related to Sturgis. This was from Sturgis. Instead, they were just using anonymized cell phone data and drawing their own extrapolations on what could have been the case. It was a modeling situation here. That was it. That was what was going on. Vastly exaggerated in this paper, and the media runs with it. People on social media spreading it all over the place. Like, oh my gosh, look at Sturgis. By the way, still no peeps about the protests for Black Lives Matter, but Sturgis, they'll make stuff up all day long. Absolutely crazy, but that's where we're at. And as Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota put it, this paper isn't science, it's fiction. We're just getting started. It's the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710, KNUS. Don't go anywhere. Yes, indeed, folks. Don't you know that you are riding with the king of the bumper music? 7 years running as of this coming 21st of September. So next Saturday night, we will have our fun special 7 year anniversary edition of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And of course, this month also marks a decade of yours truly on AM radio, which is pretty incredible and pretty crazy if you think about it. And one guy who I have interviewed periodically since 2014 rejoins me here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show on 710 KNUS. He is the host of the Conservative Daily Podcast on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and the advocacy director of conservative-daily.com. Max McGuire rejoins us here on the show. Max, my friend, welcome back.
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for having me back on.
I appreciate you coming on, as you have done for years. In fact, there were a couple of times way back when, and now you're in Texas, so maybe technology, maybe we could do it. But back in the day, you filled in for me a couple of times.
I did, yeah. I filled in a few times. It was a lot of fun. We took some callers. It was a fun time.
Absolutely. Well, time flies. It's just absolutely incredible. And you know what also apparently flies away sometimes? Stuff on your cell phone. Like occasionally you just forget your passwords and your phone's wiped, right? Like happened with some folks on the Mueller team. And it just casually happens on occasion, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're being led to believe that the people who worked on the Mueller team, the Mueller investigation, now that's the, anyone who doesn't know, was living under a rock for the last 3 years. That was the accusation, the investigation into whether Donald Trump was a secret Russian spy, which ended up not concluding that in any way, shape, or form. But we were led to believe that the people that were picked by the esteemed Robert Mueller, that he had picked the best of the best, absolutely, the cream of the crop of the FBI and the DOJ. But we're learning this week that the documents that were on their cell phones magically disappeared. And I use documents very loosely because generally they're just records, right? A text message can be a record. Mm-hmm. A photo can be a record. A downloaded document can be a record. The things on their phones, which would be classified as government records, magically disappeared because at least a dozen of them had miraculously put their phones on airplane mode, locked them, and then forgotten the password, for which there apparently is no way to unlock them. So we're being told that the best of the best, suddenly, after using their phones for weeks or in some cases even months, had just had a senior moment, forgotten their password and entered their password incorrectly at least 10 times, prompting their phones basically to self-destruct.
So they just magically and conveniently vanished, Max McGuire. So, okay, what in the world? First of all, how was this discovered? I know IG Horowitz has been doing a heck of a lot of digging into this. And what's the explanation for this? I mean, it clearly doesn't pass the smell test, but what are they saying?
Well, they're saying that they forgot their passwords and that they had no choice but to.
That was all it was.
I mean,
okay, yeah. So I was trying to find out if there was something more believable than that.
No, this is what they're going with. This is what they're going with. For example, Andrew Weissman. Andrew Weissman was called the pit bull. I don't know if you remember that. He was Mueller's pit bull. He's the one who's going into court and charging all these people with heinous crimes, trying to ruin their life, all in an attempt to get them to turn on Donald Trump. He had his phone wiped not once but twice in 2018. In March, he apparently entered his password wrong too many times, which wiped his phone. And then on another occasion, by September of that year, Weissman again accidentally wiped his cell phone and the data was lost. It's stunning. Jimmy, I don't know if it's ever happened to you. I've never been unable to open my cell phone. I mean, we can talk about what this actually is. So there's a setting in iPhone that allows you to go into it and say, okay, if I type in the wrong password 10 times, just wipe the whole phone. And the reason you have that is if your phone gets stolen, you don't want to give them the thief too many opportunities to get your password.
Right.
It's very, very rare for someone themselves to do this. I mean, we've heard cases of people's children getting hold of their cell phone, typing in the wrong thing, and all of a sudden their phone's locked for like a million years. And iPhones actually used to, and it might even still, actually show an absurd number of years if you've entered in the password too long. They just, that's how they deal with infinity. No one really does this to themselves. It doesn't really happen that all of a sudden you wake up and you've forgotten the password to the phone that you used all day the day prior. It just isn't a real thing. So they had to go into their cell phone, set up in the settings to automatically wipe the data whenever they used the wrong password 10 times. But then Apple, for the iPhone, they also have a safeguard in there, right? They don't want you to do this in your phone, in your pocket by accident, right? You could pocket dial. You could imagine that you could pocket enter the wrong password. So they actually have a timer that starts to hit. If you do it too many times, you have a cool down period where you can't try it again for another 5 minutes, another 15 minutes. In order to do it 10 times, Jimmy, in order to enter the wrong password 10 times, at a minimum, it takes an hour and 36 minutes. That's the total amount of cooldown time that an iPhone requires you to wait before you can enter in that 10th wrong password. So it wasn't just like they were spamming the buttons and getting it wrong. They didn't do it in their pocket. This was a concerted effort over at least an hour and a half for them to get the password wrong 10 times.
Well, I don't know about you, but I use my cell phone all the time. And I know they're talking about work cell phones, but if you're working, you probably use your work cell phone a heck of a lot of times. I don't know how you forget your password on your phone. I know how you can forget passwords that you have stored in different websites that you use and so forth if you do that. But for your own phone that you're using on a regular basis, I just don't see that.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. Like, it's one thing to forget the password, I don't know, for your Credit Karma account or whatever, right? You use your phone all day long, and if you're set to use the password, you have to enter that password in, continue in over and over and over again, right? You put your phone down for a minute, and it turns off, and you have to enter the password again. It's the one number, if you use the phone, it's the one number you should remember. And the idea that we're they actually think we're stupid, Jimmy. They think that we're so stupid that we're going to believe that all these top prosecutors, top investigators, again, this cream of the crop of the DOJ and the FBI, they want us to actually believe that, nope, just they woke up one day, or in Weissman's case, twice in 1 year, and just forgot the password to the phone he was just using minutes prior. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
So how many phones did this happen to? Do we know any numbers on the instances? Weissman was 2 times and that this happened. Any more specifics that we know on, because it's number 27, right?
Yeah, so there's 27 total phones that had data missing for one reason or another. We know that there were more than a dozen that had all either claimed that they put their phone into airplane mode, locked them, or forgotten their passwords, or accidentally wiped their devices. We know that Andrew Weissman had it happen to him twice in 1 year. Kyle Freeney, a prosecutor, had his phone accidentally wiped. James Quarles claims that his phone wiped itself without any intervention from him. You had Assistant Special Counsel Greg Andre and then a deputy, Rush Atkinson. They both claimed that they'd forgotten their passwords, which was the reason for their data destruction. I mean, they're going with the Hillary Clinton defense. Like, oh, what, wipe my server? What do you mean, with a cloth? I mean, that's what we're here. And listen, they were under investigation. They knew they were under investigation. Horowitz, the inspector general for the DOJ/FBI, he had already told them that he wanted to look at their phones. And all of a sudden, after that, these phones miraculously start wiping themselves, or they start forgetting their passwords. We've seen that Horowitz had to recover some of the text between Peter Strzok, an FBI official, and an attorney, Lisa Page. They were having an affair between each other, very scandalous. But he had to actually recover those because they deleted them. And the really, really shameful part, Jimmy, is that in at least one of the instances, we don't know who it was because they black out, they redact who had each phone. But we do know that at least in one case, they said, they told the inspector general, yeah, my phone, we lost everything, but I just want to let you know that there were only like 10 text messages and 5 pictures on it. So there really wasn't anything that you would have needed to look at, but you can't look at it. So just take my word for it. I mean, that's the excuses that they're giving, Jimmy. And this would be a bigger story if the media wasn't just so focused on helping Joe Biden limp to the finish line.
It's sort of like, my dog ate my homework. No, really, I promise you, my dog ate my homework, only it's a lot worse than that kind of lame excuse. Again, we're talking with Max McGuire. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, except for instead of your math homework, we're talking about a seditious conspiracy.
Yes.
Right? An attempt to overthrow a duly elected president. We're not talking about multiplication tables, right?
Yeah.
This is an attempt to remove the president.
No, exactly. Like a far more scandalous. It's not a kid's story that includes the idea of a plot and he was supposed to turn it in if he even wrote it. In this case, it actually is a plot and it is stunning. Max McGuire again, conservative-daily.com, advocacy director, host of the Conservative Daily podcast, joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. This is just the Inspector General Horowitz's effort here to get to some of the bottom. We still have the Durham probe as well. So there are two things that have been going on. Talk to us about what we know is going on right now, where things are at with Durham, his investigation.
Well, we did learn on Friday that one of the top aides to U.S. Attorney John Durham decided to resign from the probe, apparently because they are concerned. It was a she. It was U.S. Attorney, I believe it was U.S. Attorney Nora Donaghy. I probably pronounced that wrong. Just coming across the wire on the last day, she resigned because she didn't like that allegedly Attorney General Barr was putting pressure on Durham to finally release the findings, hopefully before the election. Mm. Now, we don't want DOJ investigations ever to be politicized, but if there was ever a time to finally let the American people know what happened with Operation Crossfire Hurricane or any of the Trump-Russia collusion, you would want that truth to come out before the election. And presumably you'd also want it before early voting, since so many people are going to be casting absentee ballots, voting by mail and the like. Mm. She resigned because she didn't like allegedly the probe is being pressured to finally start revealing what they found out. Now, if I was a deep stater, if I was someone involved in this seditious conspiracy and I had any say over this at all, I would want this to limp beyond election day, right? Mm-hmm. It is not unreasonable for us to want to know what happened in the last election. It is not unreasonable. We should be able to find out these truths in less than 4 years. The problem is that we had so much time consumed by this Trump-Russia witch hunt, right? By impeachment, mm-hmm. by all of this fake news. We're finally getting around to actually digging in. We had one Mueller official actually plead guilty to a felony, and he implicated other people in Mueller staff. He edited an email from the CIA to say that Carter Page was not a source. Basically, it's very easy to get a FISA warrant. The government gets like 99.99999% of all FISA secret surveillance warrants. So if the government says, hey, we think Joe Schmo or whatever, we think he's a foreign agent, the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, yeah. tends to give them that warrant. It's much harder to get a warrant renewed because you as the government, you've had all this time to listen in on phone calls, read emails and the like. The judge wants you to be able to at least prove that your initial hunch was on the right track. So in this one case, and this is, he pled guilty. This is done. He's being sentenced. He's being sentenced, I believe, December. Mm-hmm. In this case, when they were renewing the warrant, the surveillance warrant on Carter Page, Trump campaign aide, they were asked by the judge to prove one way or another whether or not Carter Page was a U.S. source. Now, that would make sense. He's overseas talking to Russians. If he is relaying information to the U.S. government, then they can't suspect that he's just a foreign agent. So this Mueller official, he asked the CIA, hey, is this guy a source? The CIA said yes. He edited the email to include the words, not a source, submitted it, and they got the warrant renewed. So the whole thing was a sham. It was a fraud. We should know this. We should know the truth. We should be able to get to the bottom of it.
You know, Max, the thing that's striking to me is Democrats for years were like, we need to get to the bottom of Russia and the collusion that influenced the 2016 election. Of course, we know that there was nothing there, period, full stop. But what's so striking is that now that we're digging into and finally getting more information about the underpinnings of that investigation, which did influence the 2016 election and started influencing how President Trump was able to get things going early on in his administration and so forth, you would think that they would, if they were sincere actors worrying about what happened in 2016, that they would, on the Democratic side, be eager to get this kind of information out there sooner than later. But nope. They don't.
Yeah, I mean, during the whole impeachment thing, the Democrats' talking point was, if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide.
Yes.
Why are they so afraid of the American people getting to hear this? Now, obviously, that's not how our system of government is supposed to work. It's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But now that we've actually had a guilty plea from Mueller's own staff pleading guilty to a felony in the commission of this whole witch hunt, right? You don't get the presumption of innocence when you're seeing this many phones. All of a sudden, oh, no, we can't. You can't actually see what's on our phones because we all forgot our passwords. And when you forget your passwords and you enter them in 10 times conveniently, that makes the phone completely wipe itself.
Gosh.
With a cloth, of course.
Yes.
So, no, you can't presume innocence when there's so much smoke. At some point, there has to be fire.
Yes.
And yes, the more we see, the more campaign offices were, the more investigation offices, they were, in fact, on fire. It's just a question of whether or not we get to learn the truth before the election, or whether Joe Biden, with all of his mental lapses and the media helping him limp across the finish line, whether or not he'll be able to get there before we learn the truth.
Once again, Max McGuire, our guest, host of the Conservative Daily podcast and advocacy director at conservative-daily.com. We got a few minutes left with you, Max, here on 710 KNUS, and I want to talk about Bob Woodward's book Rage, which of course is all the rage. I just briefly, how nonsensical this is in the way, not just how this has been covered by him in his book and presented and everything, but the way in which the media has been covering it, and the Democrats and so forth, Joe Biden taking things that were supposedly reported on from this book and from other, you know, I mean, we got a whole laundry list of books that are coming out that are anti-Trump. And then we find so many flaws in each and every one of these. But just big picture, what do you make of the Rage book?
The big picture is that these bombshells, I think that a lot of these bombshells were supposed to be October surprises. Whether you look at this, obviously Woodward has a book coming out before then. But when you look at like the Atlantic hit piece, I think that we're going to see a lot of October surprises coming earlier and earlier as Biden starts slipping, especially in swing state polls. I think it's very, very convenient that these hit pieces only ever seem to come out on the days that Biden is campaigning. Biden isn't doing a full week of campaigning. Like many people suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia or some kind of mental decline, he has his good days and his bad days, and he's only on the campaign trail a couple of days. And if you don't believe me, watch him on campaign events and then watch his basement interviews. It is like a different person. He is drowsy. He's delirious in his basement interviews, relies entirely on a teleprompter. And when he's out on the campaign trail on his good days, he's a completely different person. I don't think it is a coincidence that these big stories designed to try and destroy Trump are all being released on the same days that Joe Biden just happens to have a press conference planned, or the night prior, right? The media is teeing these up for Joe Biden to be able to have these sound bites, be able to give these very easy answers at press conferences.
Right.
And I mean, we can watch. I doubt that any of these big bombshells will come out on a day where Joe Biden is hiding in his basement and his staff has called a lid at 9 a.m.
No, I think that's a great point. But also, one of the things that Woodward released in terms of audio has been how President Trump talked about how he was, in his words, downplaying the virus. This was back in February of this year, the coronavirus, because he didn't want people to panic. And what's so interesting is that you would think that if this was, and President Trump alluded to this in his press conference this week, one of them, and that is, if it was so egregious what President Trump said at that time, oh, this is really bad, and I don't want to I'm going to downplay it a little bit because I don't want people to stir panic, you would think that Bob Woodward would immediately say, you know, I was going to hold on this until I released my book later this year, but I really think this is urgent enough, so I'm going to tell the American people what President Trump told me. Here's the audio tape. But guess what, Max McGuire? He did no such thing, and President Trump was not wanting to cause a panic, which was the right thing to do.
Yeah, a couple quick things. Anthony Fauci, even if this just falls under a broken clock, is right twice a day. Anthony Fauci said Donald Trump did not mislead the American
people. In fact, let me play a clip.
Joe Biden was holding campaign events.
I got a Fauci clip. So since you mentioned Fauci, here's what he said.
We would be speaking to the president. We talk about the cold facts. He would get them. You know, often he would want to, you know, make sure that the country doesn't get down and out about things. But I don't recall anything that was any gross distortion in things that I spoke to him about.
There's Fauci.
It might just be a broken clock is right twice a day, but he denied it. That should have killed the story. But you also had the fact that Joe Biden was holding in-person campaign events weeks after this alleged admission to Bob Woodward, where people were not social distancing, were not necessarily wearing masks. Nancy Pelosi was begging people to come and have a dance party in Chinatown.
Exactly.
Right? The Democrats were only interested in impeachment. Nancy Pelosi ripped up the speech where Donald Trump warned about the coronavirus and promised he would keep the American people safe. She ripped it up and said it was a manifesto of lies. I mean, if we're going to talk about which side downplayed it, I think it was the Democrats, mm-hmm. right? They only actually lifted it up when they realized that they could use it politically, which is what they tend to do.
Well, exactly. And if you go back to CNN and MSNBC at that time, they were consistently, quote, downplaying it themselves. There's all sorts of tape of Democratic leaders and the left-wing media doing exactly that. And yet now in this revisionist history, suddenly it's President Trump who, by the way, shut down the flow of folks from China to prevent the spread of the virus early on and was condemned by Democrats. He's the one who was being wrong-headed back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there are leftists today who truly believe that Donald Trump committed 190,000 counts of second-degree murder. They actually believe that, mm-hmm. right? Cuomo in New York actually believes that Donald Trump killed New Yorkers because he banned European travel after Chinese travel. It's the European virus, he says. Trump killed New Yorkers. That's a real quote. You can look it up. He's actually blaming Trump for killing New Yorkers just weeks after praising
Trump.
Wait.
Hold on. Trump. Let me stop you there, Max McGuire. Before we end here, wasn't it Chris Cuomo who had that policy? Governor Andrew Cuomo. They all get together and they're all the same people. Andrew Cuomo, who had his policy in those nursing homes that actually led to the deaths of tens of thousands of people?
Oh, well, no, you're forgetting, Jimmy, that actually that was also Trump's fault.
Trump snuck into
the governor's mansion. Mm. He actually signed the executive order. Just like happened in Pennsylvania, right? Trump was all over the place. Trump was everywhere. Mm. Trump was forcing COVID patients into nursing homes. That's actually one of his hobbies. Cuomo who did this, even though his signature's on the paper. It was absolutely Trump.
Thank you for that reminder. Max McGuire, check out the Conservative Daily Podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, as well as on Facebook and YouTube. Always great to check in with you, my friend. Have a great rest of weekend, and thanks for joining us.
Have a good one.
You as well. Max McGuire joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We've got a lot more coming up. Don't go anywhere.